you, Richard. Well, this is a class on how to keep fear from scaring you to death. We basically established that fear can literally scare us to death. And one of the first classes, I told you about how old Pete Steen, my friend from South Africa, told me how lions hunt. And the killer lions get downwind of the zebras and hide. And then an old lioness will get upwind, sneak around and stand up. And the zebras see her, get scared, and run off away from her, and run right into the teeth and claws of the waiting lions, and their fear actually scares them to death. And I'm tempted to get mad at the zebras until I realize that most of the human race is in a mad rush to do the same thing. We can literally let fear scare us to death. In the scriptures, we're not admonished not to have any fear. So this is not a class about how not to have fear, but it is a class on what to be scared of and what not to be. And it's a class on how to gain power and how to prevent our fears from destroying us. And in fact, how to use the legitimate fears to scare us to life. So that's the basic idea behind this idea of fear. One of the biggest fears that we have is the fear of the unknown. Is anybody in here really comfortable with picking up live poisonous snakes with your bare hands? I've always wanted to be superior. I'm comfortable with it. Is that the weirdest thing in the world? Where we live over there is about 15 or 16 miles west of here. We have a good many snakes. And over half of the ones that we find are poisonous. We have all the varieties. We have rattlesnakes, copperheads, water moccasins, and coral snakes. We found them all. I do not literally remember the first time I caught a live poisonous snake. I had to have been young, teens, or before that. And my parents were kind of amateur naturalists. And so they just taught me how. And we'd just do that. And I kept on doing that. And we did quit keeping them in the house after Lindy and I had our first baby. So my wife has had a positive influence on me. Well, it just never did bother me very much. Until Lindy sat me down one time and showed me this television show about a year ago. I don't remember the name of it, but it talks about a guy who works in an emergency room where people get bitten by poisonous snakes. And I thought, man, I didn't know that happened to you when you get bit. There were some terrible scenes on that show about what actually happens to you when you get bit by a rattlesnake or something. I just never have been scared. And is this thing cutting in and out? It feels like it is. What am I doing wrong, Mark? Anything? But after that show, I caught another snake. This was a pretty good-sized rattlesnake. We've caught, I guess, maybe 22 or 23 of those on my place so far. And this was a pretty good-sized one. We don't have the diamondback rattlesnakes. These are timber rattlers or canebrake rattlers. And this was a pretty good size, maybe 4 feet, but it's bigger than usual. It was bigger, maybe close between 4 and 5 feet, maybe. But this was an extra big snake for the ones that I'm used to seeing. And I just had to mess with him a little bit. But I got to thinking about that show And I thought, boy, this guy's liable to bite me. And so what I did, I had him in a garbage can, so I got me a stick, and I put it down there and made him bite it three or four times. I thought, well, if he bites me, now he won't have any venom left, you know. And so I dumped him out onto the ground, and my son-in-law was there, and I said, hey, JP, I want to make a segment for the Tranquility Ranch here, and video me. So he got the video camera, and I got the snake out on the ground. Now, this is a step-in post, and it's built for electric fences. It's plastic, so it's insulated. And what you do is you just push it down in the ground, and then you can go on and put another one over there and another one over there and hang your fence on. This is the most terrible snake stick that you could ever have. Well, but this is what I had. And so I started messing with that snake with this stick. And JP's sitting there videoing, and I said, okay, here on the beautiful Tranquility Ranch, we have a variety of beautiful reptiles, and one of them is a timber rattler. So I started talking that kind of mess, and so I started messing with that snake, and I was fixing to kind of pick him up, but my stick was too limber. This thing bends, and the snake was too heavy. And so I thought, well, what am I going to do now? I can't mess with my stick, my snake, because my stick's too... So I just slid my hand down a little bit to stiffen up the stick. Now I'm good, right? Well, I didn't even realize they could strike that far. And so the snake didn't like me again when I was messing with it, and it struck at me, and that snake's, the side of his mouth brushed the side of my finger right there. And he missed me by nothing. That's the closest I've ever been to getting bit by a poisonous snake. And it was the scaredest I've ever been before I messed with him, because I was worried about getting bit way ahead of messing with him. Isn't that a weird phenomenon? But good times, right? I mean, this is exciting, exciting stuff. I'm still not scared of snakes. Anybody in here really, really comfortable about walking up to a perfect stranger and talking to him for 10 minutes? What? Y'all are crazy. Not me. I can't do it. I'm too scared. Now, I've learned a little bit how to fake it, but I don't know. I'm not good at that. And it worries me, and it scares me. But some of you guys can do it, I mean, just easy. It's no problem at all. It appears to me as if the things that with which we are familiar, see, snakes, to me, is like a car. You find out what's dangerous about a car and what's not and how to handle one, it don't scare you. It's like a gun, you know, to me. You know, gun can go off and shoot a hole in you, but it also, you know, you don't have to do it if you don't want to. You don't have to make it shoot you. We can learn how not to. Snakes that way. Well, talking to strangers, though, and just sitting down and just having a small talk conversation with them, petrifies me. It's really scary. And I'm better than I was. I have to admit to that. But it appears, though, and I do have a point to all this. It's taken me a long time. It appears as if the things that we are familiar with are easier for us, right? And we're not as scared of them. Well, it's the unknown that gets us. Now, I think that I think we need help with the unknown because tomorrow is the unknown. We don't know what's going to happen to us tomorrow. And what about if we can't control it? And what about if we're not familiar with it? Anything could happen, right? So in order for me to really be good at keeping fear from scaring me to death, I got to have some peace about the unknown. I've got to be able to get some idea that the unknown is an okay friend. So if I don't get comfortable with it, I can't have peace. And so I guess I want to talk about the fear of the unknown a little bit. I heard this story to be true. I don't even know if it is. There was an old mechanic who worked at an airport. Good on working on airplanes, but he would never fly. He's scared. Never would fly. So he's fixing to retire, and his friends finally talked him into getting on the airplane and said, ride around. You've never flown. You've been here, whatever it is, 30 years, and you never have been up in the air. Do it one time at least before you graduate here, before you retire. So they talked him into it. And so they took off, taxied around, went around the airport one or two times, came back down, landed, and all of his buddies went out there and said, How was it? Did you love? He got off, he said, yeah, it's all right, I reckon, but I never did put my full weight down on that airplane. Isn't that funny? That is. I think the answer to being getting in control of the fear of the unknown is to put our full weight down on God. Don't you know it's possible to fly in an airplane and really kind of believe that worrying about it is what keeps the airplane in the air? What about your life? What are you worried about? Do you really think down inside your mind that worrying about it is what keeps it together? What about if you really could just put your full weight down and relax? You think God would get mad at you if you did that? Do you think he would say, Nathan, you really need to be more worried about this stuff? Do you think he interprets it as you're not caring if you put your whole weight down on him? What about if we could do that? That's a pretty big deal, isn't it? Well, in order to do it, you got to trust him. I've thought about this a lot. There's one level of trust that says, I'll trust God to do things for me that I can't do. All right, that's one level of trust, isn't it? That's one way of looking at God. I'll trust you to do for me what I can't do. So I ask for specific things and specific guidelines and trust him to do it. But when I'm asking God to meet my expectations, that's a little bit different from putting my full weight down on him. There's a deeper level of trust without which we can't find the peace that we need in my judgment. Because what if he doesn't do it? I specifically remember asking God to help me find a tennis ball that I batted across the street into a ditch. I never found that tennis ball. And I was probably 12. What if God doesn't give me my tennis ball? What about everything else then? If he doesn't give me my tennis ball, if I can't trust him with a tennis ball, can I trust him with my life? You ever thought those thoughts before? Well, if we really do believe that we can find peace if we put our full weight down on God, how am I going to learn how to do that? I hated family reunions, I must admit. Some of y'all love family reunions. I didn't, because I can't sit down with a total stranger and talk to him for 10 minutes. I know I'm different from many other people in this regard, but I really do think that I was kind of like a child of the forest type of deal. And of the forest and fields and streams, and most of it was because I was scared of people. And so, but I'm not scared to go out and just spend all night in a sleeping bag with no fire. You know, just go out there and lie down and let the bugs eat me. That doesn't bother me at all. But the other part does. So I didn't like reunions very well because I didn't know these people. They lived in a different part of Tennessee from me, and I didn't really know them. Even their accent was a little bit different. There's a difference between Middle Tennessee accent and East Tennessee accent, in case you didn't know. Well, and I was the East. But let's pretend for a minute that I'm 6 years old and I'm at my family reunion. And I'm in a swing and my mama's pushing me. Well, I love a swing. That's fun because it feels like you're flying there for a second or two, doesn't it? And in fact, if she pushes you too hard, you do fly, which isn't very good. But let's say my mama's pushing me and she pushes me real hard. Sometimes you get up there so far that you get a little slack in the chain and then it kind of jerks when you fun stuff. Love it. And then she could get me like this and twist me one time and just go wow like that, and you go out and twist around and around. Make me shriek with delight. Fun. Well, let's say my mom has to go make potato salad or something, and so she leaves, and I'm still on my swing, and here comes some cousin of mine that I don't know, and he starts swinging to me. And he tries some of that shenanigans with me. I'd be crying in about 30 seconds. And he could do the very exact same thing that my mama did, and it won't have the same effect. It'll scare me. What made the difference? Yeah. The only difference is in who's pushing my swing. And if my mama's doing it, that's way different deal than somebody I don't know. So I'd like to submit something to you guys to find the peace that we're looking for. We need to trust the guy who's pushing our swing. And in order to trust him, we got to know him. And then when we get to know him, it's my experience that we trust him. And then we can put our full weight down on him and our lives will get a lot better. Or it's my experience that that's the case. In order to know him, I'd like to do a little Bible lesson. If you have your Bibles and want to, let's review a story and talk about it. How are we going to get control of our fear of the unknown? John 11. There's a story of Jesus and Lazarus and two sisters. This is a fascinating story. And I read it with brand new eyes recently, and it made a big impact on me. So let's read it together and look at it. John 11. A man named Lazarus was sick. Y'all know this story? Lazarus, Martha, and Mary. A man named Lazarus was sick. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. And this Mary, whose brother Lazarus now lay sick, was the same one who poured perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hair. So the sisters sent word to Jesus, "Lord, the one you love is sick." You get that picture? Why would she call for him? What'd she think he'd do? I can only believe that she thought that he would heal Lazarus if he showed up. I can only believe that. So, "Lord, the one you love is sick." Now, when he heard this, Jesus said a peculiar thing. He said, "This sickness will not end in death. No, it's for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it." And verse 5 said, "Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus." But verse 6 makes no sense in light of verse 5. "Yet when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was 2 more days. Was he meeting expectations? Was he getting urgent when he should have? Was he showing up when they had a need? He waited 2 days. Well, then he said to his disciples, well, let's go back to Judea. Well, that's where they were. That's where Lazarus was, I believe. But Rabbi, they said, a short while ago the Jews tried to stone you, and yet you're going back there? Well, Jesus answered, are there not 12 hours of daylight? A man who walks by day will not stumble, for he sees by this world's light. It's when he walks by night that he stumbles, for he has no light. After he had said this, he went on to tell him, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I'm going there to wake him up. Does that make sense? If you got a sick man and he falls asleep, typically, if you're sick and you fall asleep, you let folks sleep because it seems to me to be a sign that you're getting better. Well, that's what they thought here, too. They thought, well, if he sleeps, he'll get better. But Jesus hadn't been speaking of his death. But Jesus had been speaking of his death, but his disciples thought he meant natural sleep. Jesus has done two things already that don't make very much sense. One of them is, two of the three people whom he loved dearly had asked him to come and heal the third one. And he waited two more days before he did anything. And secondly, he's saying he fell asleep when really what he did was he died. So he told him plainly, Lazarus is dead, and for your sake I'm glad I wasn't there so that you may believe. But let's go to him. Then Thomas said to the rest of the disciples, let's go also that we may die with him. Y'all believe in Jesus? I think you do. I mean, why would you be here if you didn't? I believe in Jesus. Well, let me ask you this. Did Mary and Martha believe in Jesus? They certainly did. What about Thomas? Did he believe in Jesus? Sure did. He loved him enough to die for him. That's wonderful. That's admirable. Let's go with him so that we can die with him. He believed in him. Mary and Martha believed in him. Did they put their full weight down on him? Let's find out. Well, Thomas said, let's go that we may die with him. If he's telling the truth, you think he's joking? Thomas, you think he's joking? It appears to me as if he's not joking. It appears to me as if he really thought he might get killed. But we're going to go with him anyway. Do y'all know anything different than that? Does anybody here study that enough to believe that he might have been not really worried about that? I think he was worried about it. Well, on his arrival, Jesus found, this is verse 17, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. So how long has it been since he got word? Do y'all know how far, where was Jesus when he heard about it? We don't know, I guess, do we? I don't remember reading where he was. How far is that from Bethany?
I'd just give you a guess, it's about 30 miles.
30 miles. 2 day walk, maybe? 3 day? When he got there, Lazarus had been in the tomb for 4 days. So they had time for him to die. I guess you have a funeral and put him in the tomb and wait 4 days. Way too.
They had a tradition that the spirit hovered around the body for 3 days. And so if it was 4 days, that proved beyond any doubt in their minds that the man was really dead.
He was dead. Well, Ian, do you know how long it typically took from a person to die to go into a tomb?
Probably the same day because of the heat. They
Okay, so it could be that he died one day and then 4 days later Jesus shows up. Okay. Way too late is my point. Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them in the loss of their brother. And when Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. And Martha made a really poignant statement here. She said, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." Did Martha believe in Jesus? Yeah, she sure did. She thought that if he had been there, he would have healed Lazarus. You think she was aggravated at Jesus? I can't. What do you think? What tone do you pick up from this conversation? It really doesn't say Martha had the emotion of anger and she said to Jesus, "If you'd been here, I wouldn't have died." What tone do you pick up from her? Grief? Pardon me?
Reproach.
It seemed to me like that. She was reproving him a little bit, rebuking him a little bit. As if to say, "You know how to heal everybody else, but not us." As if to say, "I called for you and you waited 2 days before you even moved, and then it took you at least 2 more days to get here." As if to say, "I believe you could have done it if you had wanted to. Now it's too late. But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask." You ever said that? "God, help me with this. But if you don't, I know you could if you wanted to." Well, Jesus said, "Your brother will rise again." And Martha said, "I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day." I know I'm beating a dead horse, but did Martha believe in Jesus?
She had a limited faith.
She believed in Jesus. Yeah. Yeah. As did Thomas. Yeah. Did she believe in him enough to give her peace? "Well, I know he'll rise again in the resurrection at the last day." Well, Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live even though he dies, and whoever lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this?" "Yes, Lord," she told him, "I believe that you're the Christ, the Son of God, who was to come into the world." And after she said this, she went back and called her sister Mary aside, and she said, "The teacher is here and is asking for you." When Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to him. Jesus had not yet entered the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. Does that make you mad at Jesus? Does that aggravate you a little bit? He just stopped on his way, and he didn't move any further, and he's still sitting there when Mary gets there. I don't know if it aggravated him or not, but it seems a little peculiar to me that he didn't hurry on over, because it clearly said that he loved him. Well, when the Jews who had been with Mary in the house comforting her noticed how quickly she got up and went out, they followed her, supposing she was going to the tomb to mourn there. Verse 32 says, "When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said the exact same thing Martha had said, 'Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died.'" When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. "Where have you laid him?" he asked. "Come and see, Lord," they replied. In 35, I learned this as the shortest verse in the Bible, and it was the most easy one to remember. Jesus wept. What do you think? What do you make of that? Crying because of their sadness. Empathizing with them. Thank you. Nancy suggests he might have been feeling a human grief. Well, I think we probably have different interpretations of it, and they did too. Some of them said, see how much he loved him? Others didn't feel for him at all. And they said, well, if he could heal other people, why couldn't he have done this? You see that in those verses? Jews said, see how much he loved him. But some of them said, could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying? And Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. Take away the stone, he said. But Lord, said Martha, the sister of the dead man, by this time there's a bad odor, for he has been there 4 days. Then Jesus said, did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God? I have some thoughts about that. The sisters were saying, Lord, if you'd been here, we'd have seen a miracle. But you weren't. And now it's too late. Thomas believed in him enough to die for him. Mary and Martha believed in him enough to send for him. Everybody believed in him enough to do what they had seen him do before. Nobody believed in him enough to let him be God. So everybody was sad. Our troubles are many, are they not? The unknowns of our life are limitless. There's just no limit to them. Everything is unknown. Fear and doubt plague us because we're out of control. We don't control it. Our temptation is to believe in God. Our temptation is to believe in God for Him to do what's reasonable. Had you just been here in time, if you'd done the reasonable thing, we'd have seen your power. Here's what I think He's inviting us to do here, guys, with this story. I think He's inviting us to put our full weight down on Him. On His limitless power. And put our full weight down on Him to be the master of the too late scenario. Not to just love Him enough to die for Him, and not to just trust Him enough to pray to Him, and not to just believe in Him enough to meet our expectations, but to pull our full weight down on the belief that He indeed is God, and He thinks a lot of us. What do you think? Jesus wept. I have a strong conviction in me. I don't know I'm totally right about it. But I think He wept. Because He's looking at these people He really, really, really loved. And they believed in Him. But they were completely ignorant of two things. His power and His care for them. What if we could get a really clear idea that God really thinks a lot of us, and that He's limitless in His power to take care of our lives? What if we could put our full weight down on Him and say, why don't you just go ahead and take me, God, and if you want to kill me, that's good, because you're pushing my swing. If you want to take my family, you do that. You know, this is not easy stuff. This is Jim McGuigan said it's tougher than a 50-cent steak trying to believe this stuff. But if we can get down to the meat of where we live, where we're going to get peace and power to keep our fears from scaring us to death, that's where we get it. We put our full weight down on a God of limitless power who loves us enough to cry for us. And focusing, yes, ma'am. That's a tough deal for me, because all I have to work with is my brain. All I have is, hey, it looks to me like this is the answer. And if he doesn't think it is, all right, then I'm left in this vast sea of unknown what might happen to me. That's how I experience it anyway. And what if it's not really good for me? Yeah. Well, here's what I think we can do, guys, that gives us a lot of help. One of them is, all right, we have trouble. Everybody in the world has trouble. Focusing on our trouble, and I'm nearly done, and thank you so much for listening this morning. Focusing on our trouble doesn't fix our trouble. I got to say, Jim McGuigan influenced me a lot in my life. But he talked about the children of Israel getting bit by snakes. You remember? God told Moses, build a bronze snake and look at it, and you'll get well. Well, let's say I'm out picking up my wood for the day, and one of my pieces of wood is a snake, and he bites me. And I've watched that TV show, you know, what happens to you when you get bit. Well, and I whip out my notepad, and I start taking notes. Well, the snake that bit me is 3 feet long, and he's got these patterns on it, and I checked the size of his fangs. I killed the snake, and I cut his head off, and I checked the length of his fangs, and they're 3/4 inch long. One of them has a broken tip on it. Might still be inside me. And I'm noticing my arm now. There's 2 puncture wounds in there, and it's swelling a little bit white around the edge, but now it's starting to swell and turn a little red. And I'm feeling radiating pain up my shoulder here, and I'm getting a little bit woozy. And so I write up my speech, and I go tell my buddy. Say, look here, what happened to me. And I go through my whole spiel about how terrible this snake was and how bad I feel. And you know, the whole time I'm focusing, I can learn all there is to know about snakes and snake bite and venom and anti-venom and whether it's whether it kills my blood or kills my nerves. And I can learn all about snakes and be the best herpetologist in the world by the time I get done studying. And all the time I'm doing that, what am I doing? I'm dying. What I really need to do is look at that snake like he told me to. And I'll get better. All right. Are you hurting some today? We can make a big old speech on how bad we're hurting. And we can learn everything about it. I think what he's doing is inviting us to let God be God and inviting us to know that he's limitless in his power and he cries for us. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for letting us be here today. And I ask you to be with each person here and quiet our fears and give us a sense of your presence and dismiss us today in with your blessing and with your care for us. Thank you for everything, and thank you for Jesus who makes everything possible. And it's through him we pray. Amen.